This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
الحمد لله الحمد لله خالق الوجود من العدم وجاعل النور من الظلم ومخرج الصبر من الألم وملقي التوبة على الندم فنشكره على المصائب كما نشكره على النعم ونصلي على رسوله الأكرم بالشرف الأشم والنور الأتم والكتاب المحكم وكمال النبيين والخاتم سيد ولد آدم الذي بشر به عيسى بن مريم ودعا لبعثته إبراهيم عليه السلام حين كان يرفع قواعد بيت الله المحرم فصلى الله عليه وسلم وعلى أتباعه خير الأمم الذين بارك الله بهم كافة الناس العرب منهم والعجم فالحمد لله الذي لم يتخذ ولدا ولم يكن له شريك في الملك ولم يكن له ولي من الذل وكبره تكبيرا والحمد لله الذي نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونؤمن به ونتوكل عليه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له ونشهد أن محمدا عبد الله ورسوله أرسله الله تعالى بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله وكفى بالله شهيدا فصلى الله عليه وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا أما بعد فإن أصدق الحديث كتاب الله وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وإن شر الأمور محدثاتها وإن كل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار قال الله عز وجل في كتابه الكريم بعد أن أقول أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم يا أيها الناس قد جاءتكم موعظة من ربكم وشفاء لما في الصدور وهدى ورحمة للمؤمنين قل بفضل الله وبرحمته فبذلك فليفرحوا هو خير مما يجمعون اللهم اجعلنا من الذين يفرحون رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي اللهم ثبتنا عند الموت بلا اله الا الله اللهم اجعلنا من الذين امنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر امين يا رب العالمين. In order to make an attempt to make the most of the khutbah today, I have an outline in my mind. The first thing I'd like to do is to share some meanings of the word shifa with you. This is a word used in the Quran for healing. And I wanted to discuss first and foremost the etymology, the Arabic origins of this word and how the Arabs understood this word. Allah chose the Arabic language of all the languages that He Himself revealed to Adam alayhi salam. All of the languages are byproducts of what Allah had given to Adam alayhi salam. But Allah chose to refine and craft the Arabic language through the centuries in a way that He deemed most suitable for His final revelation. So there's something special about the Arabic language. In fact, as you become a student of the Arabic language, you realize there's lots of things very special about the Arabic language. And one of those things is that, unlike other languages, words have a very, very intricate etymology. Now, a lot of you may not know what etymology means, so let me just talk to you about that very briefly. In typical languages, you know, for example, I'll give you an example. One of my friends in college, his name was Mark, right? And Mark is actually a Celtic word. So it's, you know, the Ireland region, etc. And the original meaning of Mark is warrior. That's where it actually originally comes from, okay? But when somebody calls their friend Mark nowadays, they're not thinking warrior. That used to have a meaning centuries ago. And that consciousness of that connection to warrior and the word mark, it died out over time, right? So there are lots of words in English that have very interesting etymology also. The origins of these words come from many different languages. Banana, for example, can be traced back to banan, which is the Arabic for fingers, because they were shaped like fingers and they were introduced to bananas from the Muslim world. The English language adopted this word and then it became banana, right? So you can have interesting origins, but we don't necessarily know. You just go to the grocery store, you're not thinking of the history of the word banana and its relationship to fingers. But the ancient Arabs, interestingly, for just everyday words, they had some very interesting mental associations. They connected them to other ideas. The Arab today may not necessarily do that, but the Arabs of that time did. They had these associations with words that you wouldn't expect. And it was their way of giving you a rich meaning to every word. Right, and the Quran makes very strategic use of that rich foundation that Allah allowed the Arabs to cultivate in their language. So we're going to see a glimpse of that today in the word that the Quran uses for healing, because the next part of the ayah, the series is about happiness. The next part of the ayah is about وَشِفَاءٌ لِمَا فِي الصُّدُورِ. A surface translation would be, and healing for whatever lies in the chests. So Allah has given us counsel from your master. قَدْ جَاءَتْكُمْ مَوْعِظَةٌ مِّن رَبِّكُمْ. A phenomenal counsel has come to you from your master. We talked about that last week. And today we're looking at this part of the ayah, وَشِفَاءٌ لِمَا فِي الصُّدُورِ. So the word shifa comes from shafa in Arabic. Ash-shafa harfu shay wa hadduhu. It's the edge of something, the border of something. So I want you to imagine the very trim of something, right? Wa baqiyatul hilal wa al-qamar 'inda imhaqihi wa ash-shams 'inda ghurubiha. Like when the sun is about to sink and you barely see a sliver of the sun left, or when you see the slightest, most finest remnant of the moon, that's actually called the shafa of both of those. At-tarkibu an hafat al-shay' an munqata'i jirmihi aw ghilzihi. It's basically the idea that something that is massive, like, you know, a car is massive, but if you can just see a sliver of the back of the car, that's the shafa of it. You can barely see it, and most of it has been hidden from sight, or most of it has disappeared. That's the idea of shafa. And this is a phrase that's used in the Quran, for example, وَكُنْتُمْ عَلَى شَفَى حُفْرَةٍ مِّنَ النَّارِ. Allah Azza wa Jal also says, مَنْ أَسَّسَ بُنْيَانَهُ عَلَى شَفَى جُرُفٍ هَارٍ فَانْهَارَ بِهِ. Right? So the edge of a cliff, because you reach the end of that earth, that last sliver of land or rock left, that's going to crack and fall. You know how if you go to tourist places up on top of mountaintops or edges of cliffs, they tell you not to go near the edge because it's unstable, you know, rock. It doesn't have a lot of foundation underneath it, so your weight might make it collapse, etc. So that kind of notion, that's the shafa of the mountain, or it's the shafa of the cliff, the edge of the cliff, right? That's called the shafa also. وَمِنْ هَذَا الشَّفَى مِنَ الْمَرَضِ إِذْ هُوَ تَخَلُّصُ الْبَدَنِ مِنَ الْمَرَضِ وَالْمَرَضِ كَثَافَةٌ وَإِثْقَالٌ. And from this idea of the edge and the very periphery of something, where most of it is not being ignored and the last part of it is being looked at, the Arabs developed this idea that shifa has to do with healing. How so? They said because the basic idea is that just like that, there's a large body like a mountain, and the cliff, the edge, is just a small part of it, right? Or the moon is a massive body, but the edge of it that you barely see is a very small part of it. The same way the disease is a very heavy thing resting inside a person. It's made its way inside a person and it's weighing down on a person. So it's kathafa and ithqal. That's what the Arabs say, right? And then وَالشَّفَاء خُلُوسُ قَطْعٍ وَإِنْهَاءِ هَذَا الْإِثْقَالِ. And so shifa is most of that weight has been removed. So you only have a sliver of it left. And this is actually why when someone gets better in Arabic, like when they were sick and they got better, they didn't just use the word for getting tahassan, for example, he got better. Or shafa, he got healed. But they also use khaffa, they became lighter. Right? So it's interesting because for them, the idea is sickness is something that weighs on you. It puts pressure on you. And then when most of that pressure has been relieved, then you've experienced shifa. Now this leads to an interesting conclusion. By the way, this is physical. Like, you know, physically a person can feel heavy when they're sick. Like it's hard for them to go up the stairs, for example. If they start breathing heavy when they're even walking, their steps become heavy for them, right? There's a lack of energy, so everything gets heavier. Getting up from bed becomes heavier, right? So it's slowing you down. That's the physical dimension of it. But it also has a psychological dimension. So they even say, وَمِنْهُ إِذْهَابُ حَرَارَةُ الْغَيْظِ الْجَاثِمْ عَلَى الصَّدْرِ. So if somebody has frustration, anger, rage, that's kind of filled their heart, their chest, they're always thinking about this frustrating thing, and it's playing in their mind over and over again, it's also weighing down on them, and shifa is also the release of that. So they talk about it in the literal sense and also in the figurative sense. Finally, I'll give you one more tidbit about the etymology of this word. The Arabs used this word in ancient times called ishfa, al-ishfa, without a hamza at the end. This is alif maqsura at the end, al-ishfa, al-mithqab. Al-thaqab fathun nafidhun fi jirmi al-shay' fahuwa kal-iqtita' min kathafat al-shay'. Imagine, like, you know, if something is filled like, you know, a bag that's filled with rice or something, and it's just busting at the seams, and somebody stabs it and it releases all the pressure, right? And sometimes actually in surgery and doctors, sometimes they see a swelling or something that's, you know, that's just really expanding, and they want to release the pressure. The dentist wants to release the pressure. So they'll actually make an incision and release the blood, and it releases a lot of the pressure. So the tool that's used to just make a sliver and release the heavy pressure and make it lighter again, that's actually called an ishva in ancient times. Now, the reason I took time to get into this word and its origin is because Allah, remarkably, when he's talking about whatever's in the chest, and he uses the word shafa or shifa here, then shifa is in the context, what comes in your mind when you think of healing, you think of disease, right? And when we think of disease, we want the disease to be completely removed, right? Shifa'un lima fi sudur, that should be idhabul amrad. It should be the removal of all diseases, right? But Allah did not say wa idhabun lima fi sudur, removal of what is in the chest. He said shifa for what is in the chest. And as you can tell from the etymology, it is the release of pressure. It is not the removal of pressure. It is the lightening of the burden. It is not the elimination of the burden. It doesn't eliminate your burden. What that means is actually most of what we suffer from in small quantities is actually necessary. You know, all the emotions that we have, for example, and all the physical, like, you know, if somebody has a bacterial infection, for example, bacterial infection, no science, no rocket science necessary, comes from bacteria. But our body is filled with trillions of bacteria. There are, you know, there are bacteria that we do need to function. Our body's machinery is made up of them. So in one quantity, they're a necessary component of life. But above that measure, then they become a sickness. Then they become a burden, right? The same way, every one of our emotions actually in some measure is a necessary part of being a functional human being. You're supposed to have anger at some things. If you're never angry about anything, that's also a psychological problem. You're supposed to be, something's upsetting, things should upset you. If nothing upsets you, you've got a, you know, psychopathic disorder of some kind, because something should be disturbing to you. There are sad news that doesn't make you sad at all. You feel nothing towards it. That's a problem, because sadness actually is a necessary emotion. So when Allah uses the word ma fi sudur, it's really beautiful. Because the word ma is an ism mawsul, and this ism mawsul is considered mubham, it's open-ended. So Allah is saying, whatever is in the chest, He gave shifa for. And that whatever is different for you than it is for me. And it may be that the sadness inside me is above the normal healthy quantity. But the anger inside you is above the normal healthy quantity. It may be that for someone else, distraction or, you know, their desire for entertainment, there's some, at some level, all of us want to have some fun. All of us want to be entertained, but that desire is above the normal quantity, right? Or their seriousness is above the normal quantity. They become a workaholic above the normal quantity. Or their love for one child is above the normal quantity and the other child is feeling like they're not loved at all. Good emotions or bad ones can go above the normal range. You understand? And so for each of us, we have a different kind of imbalance that we struggle with, that we tend to have. And what Allah is saying is, in His words, what He has revealed to us is a healing to undo the excess that we may get into and bring us back within healthy limits. And this is part of the meaning of the word, really beautiful meaning of the word shifa. The other remarkable thing about shifa, having the nakira on it, the tanween on shifa'un, not ash-shifa'u lima fi sudur. That would mean one prescription solves all diseases, right? But when you say shifa'un, there's an ambiguity and a greatness that is implied. What that means is, first of all, this healing, this release of pressure is remarkable. Second of all, you don't exactly know how it works or what exactly it is. You don't know which ayah will solve which problem necessarily. You can't come up with your own prescription for, you know, when you have this problem, read this ayah and your problem will go away. Actually, for a believer, and this is the beautiful history of Islam, the believer would recite the Quran with contemplation and they would shockingly discover that the thing that they were suffering from, the thing that was plaguing them, they found the answer to it surprisingly in an ayah they never expected, or in a story they never expected, or in the khutbah they never thought would have the solution to what they're going through, right? The ayah just pinpointed, laser pointed their. So, you know, we've developed this culture. Hey, by the way, if you have this sickness, read this ayah this many times or that surah that many times. And we've created a Quran prescription service, right? So in many cultures in the world, right? And then that's what that does is it takes our ability to, or our appreciation of the Quran's really unknown power of healing, an unknown power of release for you. It takes that away because you think only these ayat have the solution. The other ayat are just for information purposes. No, the healing in the Quran can come from anywhere. It can come from any part of the book as you're sincerely seeking that healing and that release. So that's the other side of Shifa'ul Lima Fi Sudur that's important to mention. Then what is its relationship with the overall subject, which is the conclusion of these two ayat is going to be where I started. فَبِذَلِكَ فَلْيَفْرَحُ, right? They should be overjoyed. The series, the series of khutbas is called Where Does Happiness Come From? And we're going back and looking at the building blocks of happiness. And the first of them was قَدْ جَاءَتْكُمْ مَوْعِظَةٌ مِّن رَبِّكُمْ, that you have to have some source of real serious, well-meant counsel in your life that can put you in check. The second one is actually this shifa, healing. Shifa'un lima fi sudur. And this idea of shifa actually is associated in pretty much any culture, also in the Arabic language, with dawa. With dawa. So shifa is the conclusion, dawa is the means, right? So you would think that the Quran is like medicine, right? The Quran is, because nobody gives you Tylenol or, you know, whatever you call it in different cultures for headaches, right? Nobody gives you ibuprofen and says, this is your healing. No, this is not the healing. This is the medicine which will lead to the healing. That's not the healing itself. It's the means to it. But what did Allah do with the Quran? He didn't say, this is the medicine that will lead to the healing. He called it the healing itself, which is interesting, isn't it? Because the thing itself is not supposed to be the healing. It's supposed to be what happens afterwards. This is Allah's way of giving us a guarantee, unlike any other procedure, and unlike any other medication, and like any other counsel. If the slave of Allah turns to their master sincerely and seeks to be healed, there is no way they will be denied. They're not just going to be given medication, they will be given the actual healing. They will be given the complete healing. And whatever is out of balance will be brought back inside of balance. What's also remarkable here, when Allah says shifa'ul lima fi sudur, Allah has solved a really big mystery for us. Most of our problems, most of what we suffer from, is actually a huge part of what we suffer from is inside of ourselves. It's actually deep inside of our own selves. Let me just give you a couple of quick examples of how the Quran can be shifa for you and me. Sometimes someone can be, not figure themselves out really. Not be able to say, why, you know, if I just, I'm so anxious, COVID happened, and then I got left back, and I couldn't finish my semester, and I couldn't finish this project, and I don't know when I'm going to be able to finish. If I could just finish it, I would be so happy. If I would just get there, then, you know, and they're day and night, they're thinking about what they couldn't finish, because, you know, life threw a curveball, right? And so now they're like, how am I going to make that work out? And if only that worked out, then I would be happy. And for a lot of, for example, sometimes I've had many conversations with families, women say, I'm really depressed. If I just had a baby, I would be so happy. And then before baby, if I just got married, I'd be so happy. If I could just get married, I know I'm really depressed right now. If I could just get married, I'll be really happy. Or if I just have a baby, I'll be really happy. And you know what you'll discover for a lot of people? Inshallah, it becomes true. But then they get even more depressed afterwards and say, I thought after I have a baby, I'll be happy. Now I have a baby, I'm happy, but I'm still depressed. Now what do I do? You know, now I'm still not happy. Because what we do is we tie happiness to these things, right? And we get them, and they may come with moments of happiness, but then you're back to who you actually were. Why? Because it wasn't the baby or the marriage or the job or the grad. That wasn't the problem. The problem was something inside your chest. So you're trying to change everything outside to solve the problem, while the problem was always inside. And so Allah doesn't come out and say, He will solve your outside problems. Because actually outside problems disappear or become much more manageable and no longer become crippling and overwhelming when you solve what's happening deep inside. So an easy example of that again is, you know, just gratitude. Gratitude. You know, there was a time for many of you where you were in very bad financial situation. You're in a very, very tough spot. And if it's hard for you to remember how stressed out you used to be at the time over things like money, things like paying the bills, things like the water, things like the electricity, things like the groceries, you know. Forget about future plans. You can't even plan for the next week. That's how bad things were. And then Allah takes you out of that and He brings you into a new situation. And now you have those problems, Allah solved. Those impossible problems, Allah solved. Some of you were so sick that the doctors had given up. And then Allah brings you back to life. You're back to normal again. And after seeing what, you know, true deprivation looks like, true financial deprivation, health deprivation, 3 years later, you're really upset that, you know, you couldn't get that house, or you couldn't get that promotion or whatever. Like, these things compared to the problem that you used to have, these things are not reason, by comparison, they're not reasons to be upset. They're not reasons to be sad. But how would you keep that perspective, right? Because it's a loss of perspective, isn't it? It's just a person needs to be, it's hard for somebody else to keep coming and telling you, by the way, look at the bigger picture, look at where you used to be, no, because when you hear it from people, you're like, you don't know what I'm going through. But what does Quran do? When you study Allah's word, then He keeps putting you in your place and putting me in my place and keeps reminding me what He's done for me and how far He's brought me. And he shows me people that were given a lot more than I was, and they were still humble. And He shows me people that were given a lot less than I was, and they were still grateful. And He keeps showing me these things and I keep getting exposed to them. I'm praying with those words. I'm hearing those words. I'm contemplating those words. And you know what it's doing? It's healing my way of thinking, my emotional process. It's easing my own frustration. It's calming me down. It's relaxing me. Things that used to give me high stress no longer become high stress. I often say this. I don't know if I've said it in Khutbah recently, but I want you to think of it as Allah has honored human beings. وَلَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ. He honored us, right? He honored the children of Adam. And one of the most amazing things that He gave us, that He did not give other creatures, is actually our emotions, what happens inside of our chests. Other creatures cannot feel the level of hope and sadness and, you know, thinking about the future and, you know, contemplating the past, the way we can use our minds and the way it affects our emotions. Yes, a dog can be sad, sure. But you can go outside and yell at a bird. It's not gonna get depressed. It's just gonna fly off. Or my dirty your car or something. I'd take revenge. I don't know. But like the idea, it doesn't have the emotional complexity that you have. And so Allah has given this human being this profound gift of what goes on inside of their chest. That gift should not be considered cheap. It's an expensive gift. So don't spend your emotions on things that aren't worth it. Then think about what I'm saying. Don't spend your emotions on things that aren't worth it. This is what Quran teaches you. This is how it heals you. Because there are some people who say things to you, but hearing their words and letting them get to you and then letting them relive in your mind and your heart over and over and over again, your emotions are too expensive to be, you know, contaminated by just someone who said insensitive words. They're too expensive for that. Your anger should be, anger is a necessary emotion, but it should be expressed at things that are actually worth it. It's too expensive to waste on, where's the water? Who left the door open? Your emotions are too expensive for that. Don't allow yourself to get invested in things that don't matter. And this is actually one of the great healings of the Quran. Allah doesn't just give us counsel, He heals us in that He gives us bigger perspective. He gives us bigger perspective. So things that usually stress you out, usually frustrate you, usually circle in your mind and don't let go, you start letting them go. That release happens and you feel relieved. You get to, you know, الَّذِينَ إِذَا أَصَابَتْهُمْ مُصِيبَةٌ قَالُوا إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. You know, those when a calamity strikes them, they just declare, we belong to Allah, and to Him alone we're going to return. Their response to any calamity is, this is not a calamity, forgetting that we have to return to Allah. That would be the calamity. That would be the tragedy. This, what was this? I used to have something and now I don't have it. Okay, well, I myself belong to Allah. I don't even own myself. So why am I so worried about some possession? Right? Within limits, we should be frustrated. Within limits, we should express our emotions. But how do we not go beyond those limits? And by the way, when we do go out of beyond those limits, some of the saddest people I've ever seen are people that keep saying, I just want to be happy. They're the saddest people I've ever met. Because they keep running after this thing they can't catch, right? And the thing that you want is actually tama'ninatul qalb. It's a calmness in your heart. That's what Allah is offering in His word. وَشِفَاءُ لِمَا فِي الصُّدُورِ. I should have said this last week, but I'm going to say it this week, inshallah, is that you can't expect that you just open up the translation of the Quran and you start reading. You're like, I heard this khutbah now. I'm ready to heal myself and I'm just going to start reading. You're like, nothing happened. I read like 3 pages, nothing happened. How do I do this? You know, it doesn't work for me. Maybe it works for others, it doesn't work for me, right? There's a legacy that is associated with the Quran. The Quran was not given to the best generation who needed healing for their hearts too. It wasn't given to them in the form of a book. It was given to them in the form of a messenger, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, who would speak to them. So they didn't just experience words. They experienced a person with whom they shared those words. And the companions understood the human dimension of sharing Allah's word. So you know what they did? Umar bin al-Khattab, for example, radiallahu anhu, established circles where people would study Quran together. And he'd make sure that these circles flourish. You have to become part of something where you're engaging the word of Allah together. You're contemplating the word of Allah together. And if you can't find a circle, a halaqa, somewhere to go, then sit with your family and do it. And when your son and your daughter, your wife, your husband, when they have questions and they don't understand, then seek out the answers. But contemplate together. Seek it together. But you're just sitting by yourself and thinking that shifa will happen. It can happen. But that's the core legacy of this is actually people helping each other. Look at even Surah Al-Asr. Al-Haqq is the Quran. Al-Haqq, one of the most common tafaseer of the word Al-Haqq in Surah Al-Asr is the Quran. But what does Allah say? وَتَوَاصَوْا بِالْحَقِّ. They counsel each other بالحق. So this is the healing, but the medicine part of it, the process part of it, is actually when we engage with the book with each other. يَتَدَارَسُونَهُ بَيْنَهُمْ, the Prophet ﷺ would say. They sit and they study together in their midst. And then angels surround them and tranquility descends on them. Now that starts making sense how this is shifa lima fi sudur, right? I can tell you just a personal anecdote and I'll conclude. I used to, when I first became like interested in the study of the Quran, and I didn't know much about the religion at all. I had a lot of friends. Most of my friends were non-Muslim. We hung out all the time. We used to just spend time playing basketball. When I was in high school, we played basketball 6-7 hours a day. Like after school until like 1-2 in the morning, I was in the park playing ball with these guys, right? We spent a lot of time together. We talked about all kinds of things that shall not be shared in the khutbah. But we had all kinds of conversations, right? And then I became curious about the Quran. And one of the things that I did, that I attended, was there was a program in a masjid in New York that we literally stayed in the masjid for a week. And we'd wake up, pray Fajr, have breakfast, and then we'd study the Quran a little bit together. Not in a heavy tafsir study, just discuss the Quran together. Then take a break, then discuss together, then take a break, then discuss together. And then I'd go to college in between, go to work and come back and we discuss again. And it was like a 7-day experience like that, right? And I can tell you, that was one of the most powerful experiences of my life. Not for what I learned, but for what I felt in here. For what I felt. Like I know for a fact, my emotional programming completely changed because of that week. It completely changed. There were some things that I recognized in myself or part of my wiring that were keeping me from being free. And by the way, freedom is very closely associated with happiness, right? They were keeping me contained. There were chains on me. And I felt like those chains were removed. when I spent that time. And it was through the word of Allah and through those friends and through those mentors that were sharing the word of Allah. They don't even know that they're doing, that's the funny thing. They don't know that they're doing that. They don't realize they're doing that. It's the word of Allah that's doing it. All we're doing is just sharing it with each other. And then it has this divine effect of healing that is beyond imagination. And that's shifa'ul lima fi sudur. This is something we have to bring back into our society. This is something that is needed because we are all in need of that feeling of release, that release of pressure that is inside of our hearts by hearing Allah's word being shared with each other. We don't know, this same khutbah could affect one person in one way, another person in a completely other way, because what is ma fi sadrihi is different from ma fi sadriha. It's completely different, right? And the way that shifa hits, what part of these words hit, how they hit, Allah only knows. That's for Allah Azza wa Jalla to know. So that's my genuine advice to all of you, is to institute that in your lives. Just like we worry about eating healthy, just like we worry about, you know, good sleeping habits, just like we worry about good financial habits, saving properly, right? Security habits, lock the door when you come. You take care of things. That's life. You have to take care of things. Well, you have to take care of your spiritual joy. And one of the ways to do that is to institute that in your life. So I pray that you're able to do that and make that a legacy you can even leave behind for your children. Barakallahu li wa lakum fil Qur'an al-Hakim wa nafa'ani wa iyyakum bil ayati wa dhikri al-Hakim. Alhamdulillah wa kafa wa salatu wa salamu ala ibadihi alladhina istafa khususan ala afdalihim wa khatam an-nabiyyin Muhammadin al-Amin wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. قال الله عز وجل في كتابه الكريم بعد أن أقول أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إن الله وملائكته يصلون على النبي يا أيها الذين آمنوا صلوا عليه وسلموا تسليما اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما صليت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد اللهم بارك على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما باركت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد عباد الله رحمكم الله اتقوا الله إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر ولذكر الله أكبر والله يعلم ما تصنعون أقم الصلاة إن الصلاة كانت على المؤمنين كتابا موقوتا